This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Caleb, with that being said, when you... The past is the past. You're here now. Ben Johnson has made some tweaks to your game. How have you adjusted to the change in the stands? How have you adjusted to being under center a little bit more?
I guess the Ben Johnson effect, right? He's going to get a kick out of that when he hears it.
Caleb Williams joking around about his coach. He's going to get a kick out of the Ben Johnson effect. It's going to be a great dynamic. It's going to be a fascinating dynamic to watch. Very confident kid who's learning humility on the fly. Very confident coach who you will watch learn to give grace to the kid, but also coach the kid hard with serious expectations.
The kid's not the only one that he's coaching hard, which I think is great. You know, Cassie Carlson and I were talking about it on her show this morning, and Cassie is actually going to be one of the people sitting in for you tomorrow.
Yeah, I got a family funeral that I need to head to tomorrow, and I will do that. And you've got a couple people sitting in tomorrow.
Sarah Spain's going to hang out with me from 2 until 5, and then Cassie Carlson is going to come here and basically do like an extendo Bears report at 5 o'clock with me tomorrow. It's going to be fun.
Outstanding.
It'll be a good time. But yeah, the coach is clearly like, oh, that scouting report we got from Lomas Brown was spot on accurate.
Mm-hmm.
He is not for the play when it comes to the things that he wants and the way that he wants things done.
And yesterday it came out from Albert Breer that the Bears coaches, Declan Doyle, JT Barrett, and Ben Johnson have been working with Caleb Williams on two things. One was pre-snap information and procedure. And the other was body language. And this stuff was based on all the Bears film they had watched from last year. And today, Ben Johnson spoke about this and spoke about Caleb Williams's body language, what they have addressed so far, how they're working on it.
You were joking with us last week about your body language being something you wanted to work on. And there was a report that Caleb's body language is something that you guys are focusing on. In meetings and all of that, like, what specifically do you want to work on him with in that respect?
Man, there's adversity that's going to hit every team every season. You don't know when it's going to happen. We might lose a few games. We might have some turnovers, and yet just the wherewithal of we're steering the ship. We're going the right direction. It's not woe is me. We are going to take everyone around us, we're going to elevate them, and we're going to look to forge ahead to what's next. And so it's not dwelling on the past. It's not whether it's last season, last play, last game. We learn from it, we grow, and we move on. And so our body language needs to reflect that as well.
What kind of examples can you give Caleb about body language and quarterbacks that you work with that you've seen that you want him to kind of reflect? And how do you come about kind of this realization as you were studying up on him coming to this job?
Early in the process, we sat down and we watched some tape from a year ago, and we talked it through. It's like, do we really want to – is this what we want to look like or not? And we come to an agreement. No, it's not. And okay, we learn from it. And we move on to the next thing. So, Yeah, it's body language is a huge thing. Demeanor. We don't want to be a palms up team where we're questioning every. No. That's a little bit of a sign of weakness, and we don't want to exhibit that from anybody on the team.
How does that apply to DJ Moore? You know, there were some instances last year where his body language was caught on camera and caused some people to ask some questions. Is it similar with him? Have you talked to him about?
Yeah, we've talked to the entire team about what we want it to look like, what good teams do, what playoff teams do. This is the example we're setting, and this is the direction we're going. So the good news is this. We have a phenomenal coaching staff, a lot of which were former players in this league and did it at the highest level. And what they say carries weight with our guys. They know what it looks like. We have a number of guys that we brought in free agency this year that they know what good football looks like as well. So, it's all about educating, showing them what we're going to be about going into next season.
Speaks, can I just tell you that beyond Ben Johnson, there is someone else who is not here for the play-play, and it is Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times.
He was the one to Caleb who said, does your dad speak for you?
He is out there like, hey, I got six words. Here's the question.
Does your dad speak for you?
That was one, and then he's the one who asked about DJ Moore. He just threw it right there. Like, how does that reflect on DJ Moore? Well, we talked to him.
Great job asking questions. And hey, Potsy's not in the room anymore. Someone might have to be the bad guy. And even though Patrick Finley is like the sweetest sweetheart in the world, not when he's up there working.
Yeah, that was good stuff. I loved that from Ben Johnson. You hire a head coach and hand him the keys to the organization so he comes in and tells you how he wants you to do it from the top all the way on down. And if he, having worked for Dan Campbell and under Dan Campbell, has come to believe that the body language matters, that palms up is a sign of weakness, to quote him, then go ahead and tell that to your players and demand it. And tell it to the public, too, as you're talking about. I love that, man. Follow the head coach's lead. If he tells you it's a big deal, it is a big deal.
It's a big deal to him. I don't want Caleb turned into a robot, though.
No,
is it? I want him to be able to feel feelings and occasionally express them. It's just a matter of when and where, how you do stuff. But I don't want him to. It's a very like fine line because, like we were talking about yesterday, the concept of a pitcher showing up his defense when a guy makes an error. I do think that it's okay occasionally to be exasperated, but that exasperation mostly has to be with you're disappointed in yourself.
Or you're disappointed in how something went.
Something turned out.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Have that feeling. Process it. And then move on. As Ben said, you're not focused on last year or last week or the last play. Like, okay, man, that sucked. And then forge ahead. And that's what he's trying to teach. And maybe it won't be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. That's all right. It's about progress.
But maybe there was so much of it. And you would think that if they had enough to put a reel together for the young man, maybe there was so much of it that Ben's like, hey, man, this, we can't have this.
Yeah, sounds like a good process to me. They sat together. They talked about, do we want this to be what we do? No, I don't. Okay, all right, let's change it. And so they'll try and change it and call him out if it happens or does not happen.
Speaking of good process, I think it was probably good process to bring in Case Keenum. This is what Ben Johnson had to say about why they brought him in.
How have you seen Keenum helping Caleb throughout the process?
Case has been phenomenal. I haven't been with him in the past, but he came highly recommended from a number of people that I trust. He's got skins on the wall. I mean, he's been to playoff games. He's won playoff games. He's done it at a high level. He's been the number two quarterback at a number of different places as well. So his experience level is off the charts. He's seen a little bit of everything that this league has to offer. And I can say from my experience of being in the room with him, he finds a good way to ask questions that I might not, or Declan or JT, we might not have provided the answer to prior. So he does a good job filling those gaps. And then, of course, we're constrained so much by the time limits in the springtime that he's able to help the process when we're not in there as coaches.
On that note, we saw him the last 2 weeks with like running the twos, and today with the 2-minute offense, him still there in that position. Is he in running that for that position? Him and Tyson?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how we explained it to him, that's how we explained it to Tyson. We're going to continue to mix up the reps over the course of the preseason. And then at some point in training camp, we'll make a decision with who has earned that number two job and we'll go with it. But for right now, we got to battle. Just like we've been saying from the start of the springtime, there is no depth chart. We want as much competition to create growth that we possibly can.
There is a full understanding of what Case Keenum's job is, why you get a veteran. And again, just like in the Albert Breer report referenced, being able to have him continue to work with Caleb outside of the CBA regulations on how much time they can spend with him.
Help the process when we're not in there as coaches. And hey, Tyson Bagent, go earn it. You're probably in the lead right now, but you're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to CrossFit your face off to get some of this stuff done.
I was too busy grinding my absolute face off.
Let's talk to our old friend Chase Daniel at some point, and I wonder if he would tell us honestly if there were times when you didn't necessarily want to win the number two quarterback job.
You want to keep that $1 million check and not get hurt. That's how you end up as a Hall of Famer at the bank.
Like, Case is like, yep, I'm here for it, absolutely, and I will happily spend all the film time after the practices. As for winning the number two job, that's all right, Tyson can do that.
Yeah, Tyson can do that. You know what I don't like? I don't like getting hit.
I mean, probably not. I don't know if Chase would cop to it, and I doubt that Case would cop to it right now.
No, Case here to play football.
Damn,
he's here to play football.
They need a Chase and Case show at some point.
Yeah.
Right?
That's like my Barry Trotz and Terry Stotts hockey and basketball podcast that I put together in my mind.
Stotts and Trotz?
Stotts and Trotz.
I can't.
It would be great.
That's like the Adam Studzinski and Jenna Duddleston project you've been trying to hatch as well. Studs and Duds.
Studs and Duds.
Yeah.
Or probably Duds and Studs.
Oh, man. I don't know. Thinking, there's Studs right now.
Studs doesn't need to be first.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Respect.
We're going to put a podcast together with you and Jenna, and we're going to call it Duds and Studs.
Studs and Duds.
Already have a podcast.
If you called it Studs and Duds, he was in. I'm telling you. Texture's loving Ben Johnson like I am as he's like delivering the body language stuff and more. Texture says, Ben Johnson ain't biting off kneecaps, but damn if he isn't snacking on some ankles. He's got some Dan in him.
Of course.
He's laying down what kind of culture they are going to have, what they're going to do. And to him, the positivity matters.
I will still also go back to, at his essence, mm-hmm. Ben Johnson is a quarterback. And people need to not forget that part of it. He's used to having a level of responsibility and leadership. So I'm not surprised. And then you take from these coaches that you've been around and you see the example and the wide berth that Dan Campbell gave him to run his practices the way that he wanted to run them.
Yes.
And now he's doing it for the Bears. Hopefully.
There is a big position that needs to be sorted out on the offensive line. It is left tackle. And we are told today that Ozzie Trapillo was out there lined up with the ones in this particular practice, and Ben Johnson was asked to comment on the left tackle spot.
So I'm Agassi at left tackle last week when we were here, and today it was Ozzie. Is it one day on, one day off for each guy, or is it based on how they're...
We're moving guys around. Yeah, we want to give everyone an opportunity. So, Darnell, we feel pretty comfortable keeping him at the right side right now. So the left side, until we get Braxton back in the mix, it's going to be a little bit of musical chairs.
Would you consider right tackle settled then, that he's not going to move?
To be determined. Anything's on the table, and we're going to let the plan play out, which is keep them there for the time being and let these guys battle it out on the left side. And
So that's interesting.
Still think there's a chance that Darnell goes to left.
You think so?
But there's still some interesting missing information here.
But his language there at the beginning was, we're pretty well settled, and then when pushed, he didn't want to go definitive.
But right.
I don't know. They want to see if Ozzie can play it.
They want to see if Braxton Jones exists. Like, for real. Mm-hmm. Is he okay? Is he healthy enough to be your left tackle? And then it's a guy that he didn't draft versus a guy that he did draft. In Karan Amagaji versus Ozzie Trapillo.
Mm-hmm.
I like, this is what this time of year is for.
You're in the knowledge acquisition business. So they're just moving guys around, trying to figure it out. I like the process. Tanny, you watched all of this latest episode of 1920 Football Drive, right?
I did, yeah. And I thought there was an interesting clip that kind of goes along with this whole left tackle thing. And the 1920 Football Drive took you inside the latest episode of their draft room. You saw some of the clips come out where they, you know, call the players they just drafted and all that. But this was kind of like the zoomed out version of that. They have profiles with the scouts and talk about, you know, some of the other things about these players that went into selecting them. And they have, like, some of the stuff is like inside of the meeting rooms before these guys were drafted, and there was some really interesting stuff in there, especially with Ozzie Chirpillo. And this kind of relates to what we were just talking about, and Ryan Poles kind of said something here that got my radar up on the left tackle thing. But also, my takeaway from this clip here is how smart of a guy Ozzie Chirpillo is when he's breaking down stuff in the room. Like, and this was pretty impressive to me for like a pre-draft meeting. So I think all this was good, and it all relates to what we're talking about with this left tackle spot.
We made a switch. We took Ozzie first. We felt there was a little bit of a drop off after Ozzie, and we just knew that he was dependable, he was smart, he was tough. Someone that's going to compete for a starting tackle job, regardless if it's the right or the left.
There he is. Seth freaking Rollins. My son's probably going nuts right now.
And with the 56th pick, the Chicago Bears select Ozzie Chirpillo. Let's burn it down! Burn it down, Chicago!
His tape and his personality and who he is identical. He's dependable, he's smart, he's exactly where he's supposed to be, he presents himself very well. And when he walks through the door, he fills the door frame up quickly. You just get a real good vibe for how big of a man that he is.
Ozzie, Dan, nice to meet you. Come on in, Vic.
Awesome.
Right over there. Now, obviously in this race set, does this change your step pattern?
Yes, it does. So I'm still trying to take the shortest possible angle to get to my aiming point. That's how we worded it. My aiming point changes when I have inside help. So especially with a guard bubble, you know, it doesn't change. But the guard bubble in my head, I know I have a little more help than if there were a three tech.
Perfect.
Really impressive. Really impressive interview. I mean, it felt like talking to a five-year NFL vet. You know, just the presence that he has as a person, the maturity, the intelligence to go along with the mental and physical toughness. We're really excited to throw Ozzie in the mix because he's fitting the blueprint of what we're trying to establish.
That's the offensive line coach, Dan Roshar, talking about him coming off like a five-year vet.
That's really terrific stuff. Great find, Tanny. That's
so what jumped out at you when he's talking about how big he is in the doorway?
Well, no, that's obviously funny. He could fill up a doorway, which I should hope if you're going to be a starting tackle in the NFL. But just what Poles said, that he's ready to compete for a starting spot either at right or left. And that was taped like obviously a month ago. So they have their ideas about what this kid can do. And mm-hmm. then you hear Ben Johnson there saying that, you know, anything's on the table in terms of moving Darnell. I think you see Darnell move to left and you'll see Ozzie play at right.
You think so?
I think so.
Can we hear
that?
Can we hear the Ben again? It's only 34 seconds with the question.
It's all over the place, you know, so which is like, yes. Which is why I'm interested. You
me,
know?
Me too. So here's Ben on the left tackle once again. Patrick Finley's question, because Patrick Finley.
So, Ozzie at left tackle. Last week when we were here, and today it was Ozzie. Is it one day on, one day off for each guy, or is it based on how they're?
We're moving guys around. Yeah, we want to give everyone an opportunity. So, you know, Darnell, we feel pretty comfortable keeping him at the right side right now. So the left side until we get Braxton back in the mix, it's going to be a little bit of musical chairs.
Would you consider right tackle settled then? That he's not going to move.
To be determined. Anything's on the table, and we're going to let the plan play out, which is keep them there for the time being and let these guys battle it out on the left side. And
it's fascinating. You both of you guys hear that as Darnell could still eventually move, right? I hear.
Yes.
I just hear him giving that lip service. At
maybe.
The end. I hear the opposite. I hear Chirpillo and Braxton will battle it out if Braxton's even healthy, but that Chirpillo might have this job.
So you heard that Karan's out?
I believe the Karan's a backup.
But he was talking about Karan.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but until Braxton gets back.
If he gets back.
Either way, I heard that Darnell's going to stay on the right.
Attention, sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games, offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're getting to know each other. He's been in the building 6 weeks now, 6.5 weeks now, and getting to know him on a personal level. And the more time we spend together, the better I feel. We got a great coaching staff around him as well, with JT Barrett leading the charge. Declan's in the room. Press Taylor's in the room. So we've got some good seasoned voices in there. And then you bring in a guy like Case Keenum. He does a great job with his experience bridging that gap sometimes between coaching and playing, and finding any potholes that could be in there.
We broadcast live through the Scores Hyundai Studios, but Rahimi Harris and Mark Rohde today are live from Brick House Tavern in Wrigleyville.
That's all you right. Folks.
Our crew is here. They are proud. At Brick House. It is a fun time, and they get to join us, and we get to be with them this rainy morning. In fact, we're coming to you live from the Brick House Tavern in Wrigleyville for Cubs on Deck. Ian Happ will join us at noon for an hour. That'll be really fun. Cubs on Deck, powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago. Visit your local Verizon store today. That was, of course, Ben Johnson talking at the most recent press availability with Bears OTAs. We understand they have another one of those today. Mm-hmm. The schedule can be scattered, but we've gotten that information. We also have a piece of information that came out from Albert Breer. This is on Sports Illustrated, and it is one of the subheads. He talks about the passing of Jim Irsay to begin, which makes sense. Caleb Williams, though, is part of it. And the headline is, Caleb Williams has gotten a lot of attention for being out on the team's old regime, but every indication over the past 4 months is that he's been in on the new one. Breer goes on to say, and I'd say that with this very important caveat, it is pretty easy for a quarterback to buy in on a first-year coach with an offensive background who is hired, at least in part, to get his own career off the ground. No one's lost a game or thrown a pick or had a plan come undone. That said, from day one, Williams' buy-in on Ben Johnson has been high. The 23-year-old was there alongside DJ Moore and Robodunze for the introductory press conference, which is a small but notable thing for a guy to do coming off of his rookie year. That, in turn, gave the two their first chance to sit down and talk face-to-face. So this goes on a little bit. It talks about coaches understanding that he was sacked 68 times. It goes on to mention, you know, the details, whether it's, for example, this says there was a smattering of small things, like on the first play of one game, he turned to his left, thinking the motion was coming, what was actually coming from the right. That needed to be cleaned up. And all of this, I think, is some sort of reset in response to, again, what we've talked about a lot, which is that Seth Wickersham article previewing his book coming out. I will again reiterate, Caleb Williams' father is the one who spoke on his behalf. He also acts as his agent. Yeah, that was significant information to all of this. What were you guys' takeaways when you saw this? I just thought it was reiterating things that we already knew.
Well, I think that one of the really important things that was pointed out, and hearing the bite coming in talking about Case Keenum, that was a big hole in the game last year for Caleb Williams, not having an adult in the quarterback room, so to speak. And that's no slight on Tyson Bagent. Tyson Bagent, he's got his own thing going on. You know what I mean? Like, Tyson Bagent wants to be a starter in this league. So in his head, he's competing for a job. He's not trying to tutor Caleb Williams. And I don't know that we would want him doing that. So the fact that they have Case Keenum in that room now, they're telling you how important that was. And another mistake made by the Bears last year to not have that guy in the room with him. I did think it was interesting, too, that in that article that there are two areas of improvement that they're talking about Caleb Williams needing, and that is the body language, where he's slow to pull himself up off the field. And I get it, he got knocked down a lot, but like, you got to show up a little bit in that regard. And then the pre-snap procedure. And I think that that's we're getting to an area there now where I think Bears fans should appreciate it, because that is about on the field. That is about taking charge, getting the play out quickly, recognizing the protections, knowing the routes of your receivers. So that's some real stuff that that we all are at this point assuming that Ben Johnson is going to take care of, to make better at this point.
I think, Grody, Layla, when you look at what Caleb Williams' expectations are from the coaches, the fan base, the NFL at large, they expect him to be a superstar. He was drafted number one overall. And he obviously did not have a rookie season necessarily becoming of a superstar for a variety of reasons. Whether you want to talk about the coaching staff, whether you want to talk about, I don't know, being a rookie quarterback in the NFL, you could talk about the offensive line. What this Albert Breer report did was it kind of put things straight in terms of, hey, here are the things that are better for Caleb Williams now than they were last year. Case Keenum exists. He's there. And read a direct quote from this. Williams has taken advantage of it in using Keenum almost as another coach after hours.
How about that?
To work around the CBA mandated limits on what the coaches can actually do with the players at this point in the calendar. But more importantly than that is that you're seeing direct results of a coach cleaning things up. It's a reset for Caleb Williams, whether people want to admit it or not. He's got a brand new coaching staff that he's dealing with right now. And the first thing a brand new coaching staff is going to do is get rid of whatever bad habits they can easily see on tape. So they're going over that right now. And I think this story, although you can question the timing of it, what it came behind, it's just good news. And you should be in good news mode if you're the Bears or if you're a Bears fan. It should be good news right now.
Two people I never thought I would talk so much about in the Bears offseason are Kyle Monongai and Case Keenum.
Well, Case Keenum.
What do you got against Monongai?
But my point is, yes, it's great that these people are here. Yeah, but at the same time, one is a seventh round pick in the draft who is a running back because you needed a running back, and that's who your draft board dictated you get. And the other one is, yeah, I am aware of Case Keenum's repertoire, probably more so than most people in this room, as I had been following him since his high school career back in Abilene. But the point is, that's not the only voice that needs to happen here as far as what he needs to do. When Caleb Williams needs to watch tape, yes, the coaches only have limited time with him. I would assume there's some dialogue about homework there. Pre-snap reads is what we're talking about when it came to the motion example that Albert Breer illustrates. And yeah, I do think that Case Keenum will help, just like I think other veterans in the room, like Joe Tooney, for example, Grady Jarrett, will help when it comes to understanding overall morale, not letting one game beat you 10 times in a row, and things like that. But the body language piece of it to me is not something that I was worried about with Caleb Williams.
Me either. When I read that,
when that was pointed out, I'm asking, why is that something that was important to this group? You know, that's a part of this where I'm going, yeah, we'd all have been in that situation and felt the same way. I didn't mind when he was lying on the bench. I totally understand that was happening.
The man was beat up, and I get it. If you're Ben Johnson. You're like, well, quarterback shouldn't act like that. Well, you know what? You kept your quarterback clean. He didn't get sacked. He got sacked basically less than half the amount of times that Caleb Williams got sacked last year. There's a reason Jared Goff is able to carry himself with a bit more composure, not just because he's a veteran quarterback, but because he's not getting blown up every other play. Now, some of that is on Caleb Williams not getting rid of the ball quick enough, but a lot of that is on scheme and protection. And I was curious as to why that was such a big deal, but maybe he's sending a message, whoever this is, giving this information to Albert Breer by having this go. And to your point about the homework component of this for Caleb Williams, nothing helps with homework from somebody who's had a rough go of it, let's say, in their last report card, than getting a tutor. Case Keenum's the tutor, and he's doing tutor's work right now.
I would hope it's also, but even Matt, Ben Johnson has talked before about who he has had work with him on his staff. He mentioned Harrison Freed a few times, that they had a relationship from the Miami Dolphins, and that was somebody who was helping Caleb Williams with download as far as information the offense was concerned. This is also something that happened last year, by the way. That was a big point of emphasis, was they talked about the Bears staff at the time, talking about working with him on that stuff before and after the limited time that coaches get with their players. So I feel like all of that is in line.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't want us too much to depend on people who that's not their job, you know?
Imagine being Caleb Williams last year, because I think Caleb Williams was like us when they named Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator. We're all like, okay, who is this guy? Oh, he's the Geno Smith guy. And you do a little bit more research, and he's like, he's just perfectly mediocre. And now everybody is now confirming what we kind of already knew. I mean, it's already been said. Of course he loves Ben Johnson the same way everybody else does, based on his reputation and the body of work that you have seen from Detroit. So that is zero revelation to me that, of course, he is bought in on this guy, especially relative to what happened last year with Shane Waldron and two coaches getting fired. But here's the thing about Ben Johnson. He's got a very inexperienced offensive coaching staff, starting with Declan Doyle. And believe it or not, I think that's good, because I think for once, like every year we go through this. I mean, I started covering the Bears, you know, in the Mitch Trubisky time. I was there for just about as, and there were all these Mark Helfrich and Dave Ragone, all these voices around all of these guys. Like, who is Ben Johnson? I think for the first time as a head coach, play caller, that will be the guy who is 75% in his head teaching him. Now, the other guys are going to play their parts, but maybe not to the same extent that coaches did in the past with the support for his predecessor, Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields. And I think that that is good, that it's going to be Ben Johnson and him only a lot of times.
I think there's an element of teaching the teachers. For a first-time head coach, you've got to teach your coaching staff how to be an extension of you. And that is especially the case when you hear Ben Johnson mention his offensive coaches. One of the first questions we all asked was, what exactly is Declan Doyle at 28 years old being asked to do? So that's a big part of it. And to his credit, Ben Johnson told you what he wanted his quarterback to do, is see the game through his eyes. I would assume some of that carries over to your coaching staff.
I think one of the advantages of having such a young coaching staff on the offensive side is being able to mold them to see things the way that you see them, just like he's trying to do with Caleb Williams. And there's no bad habits there that have to be unlearned, because they're guys that he has already vetted and said, I can make sure this guy sees it the way I see it. Everybody on down in the coaching staff, all the way to the backup quarterback.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, Ben Johnson isn't the one throwing the passes. Ben Johnson isn't the one necessarily making a pre-snap read. You know, the motion issues were there. Like, how many times have we talked about the first drive of games?
Mm-hmm.
A million times.
Yeah.
And that's something that we'll again focus on, and I can't wait until the next drive that's executed and they drive down the field for a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, at some point in time, like I've said it a million times, Layla, at some point in time, with all the excuses gone on those first few plays of the game, there's one common denominator that was out there, and that was number 18, Caleb Williams. So there are really, whether you want to see it or not, there are obvious areas. And this is good. that where you can improve Caleb Williams, and he can improve. It's not like you think about some of the real issues last year with and Caleb had, you know, like for a rookie an average season, but he did he had some accuracy issues, but he didn't have those accuracy issues for the most part in college. So that is something that one can expect to get better on his watch, because Caleb Williams was not really part of his story coming up and landing with the Bears.
Well, interesting notes from Albert Breer, but I think for the most part, you're right, Gertz, and there wasn't a lot that we did not know.
Mm-hmm.
But the body language one is one that kind of surprised me, because maybe it's we saw too many Justin Fields games year in and year out, where mm-hmm. that poor guy was also dealing with a lot of the same issues, so... It just didn't stick out to me as much last season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess it didn't really with me either. I didn't necessarily notice that. But if that's something that's being said, then obviously the players are talking about that. The coaches are talking about that. You know, you don't want to show your guys up. I mean, lay down on the, you know, on the ground, get up, let's go get in there, get the next play out, and let's recover from what just happened instead of hanging out.
That is correct. Coming up, it is halftime. We have more from Brick House Tavern. Our crew is starting to get some food in here. I always think the Brick House does a fantastic job with the food, so strongly recommend for everybody who's waiting in line to get to the buffet. In the meantime, we've got more to come here on the show. Rahimi Harris, Mark Rohde, live to you from Wrigley. That's next on The Score.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of casino-style games like bingo, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
That was a funny one that came out. It wasn't that I didn't know how to watch film. It was more or less the sense of learning shortcuts in the sense of, or not learning shortcuts, but learning ways to watch film and be more efficient, learning ways to, you know, pick up things better. And so that was a funny one that came out, that, you know, in context and how I was trying to, you know, portray it, didn't get portrayed that way. So.
Right. Which is about you watching film. Like, no one's saying that when they turn the film on that Caleb doesn't know that it's a football game with football players. I didn't like that part. And the reason I didn't like that part is that it's totally okay for him to not know everything. It's okay for him to be like, you know what? I'm working on all of this stuff. I'm working on all that part after the, no, I don't have an issue watching film.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how to watch film, though.
He was embarrassed at the way that was described, don't you think?
I'm sure, but I don't think that he needs to be. Well, I think that, and the way that he talked about it and the way that he talked about Case and helping him along in that regard, I think is good. I think it's all right to say, I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yes.
And now I have a better sense of what I need to know.
But being comfortable.
And knowing is half the battle.
But being comfortable, Lawrence, admitting what you didn't know or what you don't know is a very difficult thing for people of all ages to do.
Agreed.
Let alone a 23-year-old kid who's trying desperately to portray strength as the leader of an organization, as the guy who is capable of turning the entire thing around. As was put on him last year, as he wants to believe. It's like he was embarrassed. He didn't like that description. Then as he describes it, to your point, yeah, he was describing exactly what it was, learning shortcuts, learning other ways to watch film. And he brought it back up later, the clarification of it, and brought up Case Keenum's influence. I thought it was fascinating. I thought the longer he went, the stronger and louder and more comfortable and fewer there were. And I feel like we're watching a kid mature as a public speaker, and it's not going to be linear.
No.
Either. So, like, he got more comfortable as it went on. When he was standing up to his dad, he was like, come on.
He told his dad to shut the bleep up.
Does your father speak for you was the question. Was that a Herb Howard? I think it was.
No, I think that was Patrick Finley.
Okay. Well, whoever said, does your father speak for you? It was like, oh, no. I shut him down quite a bit. He's a smart man. We talk a lot.
I'm a grown-ass man.
Good for you. And that's part of this, too. You know, you wonder how much he had to talk to Seth Wickersham because his dad already did. You know? And like...
Caleb, I got your dad on record.
Yes!
Would you mind?
Oh, God.
Does your dad speak for you?
No. No.
Yeah, it was no. Patrick Finley. Good call. It's well phrased because it pissed him off, and he should be pissed off. His dad has put him in some tough situations, and he talked about that. And go ahead, like his dad. My dad is super hot headed. I tell him to go ahead and go away. We have talks about it. Good for you. I mean, this is a kid learning how to be a man in full. He said his parents are still his best friends. I mean, his dad and he had the plan together. I felt good about listening to that kid advocate for himself and get stronger as it went. And I think it'll be a sense of relief to have discussed it. And now he can move on with a very important offseason, and we can watch him hopefully grow up as a player at the same time he's growing up as a man.
Yeah, and it's hard. Like, it's a really difficult thing to do, especially when you feel like you have been the guy. And you were the guy that had all of the answers when you were in college. And now it's different. You're in a different place. It's difficult sometimes to come to the realization of, I don't know everything. I've got to figure some of this stuff out. I think that he is now armed with someone who's going to actually help him.
Big time.
Which... to me, like, I kind of wish that he would have leaned into the, and this has been bus tossing and people would have been mad at him, but I wish he would have leaned into more of like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff I had to learn on my own, and now I don't. Now I don't. I am right here with Ben and Declan and whoever else wants to help me out, and it feels great. I feel amazing knowing that I have all the help of this organization behind me, and I can't wait for us to show it to you guys to see what we're going to do.
We will start to see that comfortable humility and maybe him talking about it in that way because he's got that strength around him, because he's got lots of strength and lots of wisdom around him. And we'll see it, and I think we'll get a chance to notice it as it develops. This, and we're going to take your phone calls at 312-644-6767. I thought this was fascinating. When he was asked about the book coming out later, he seemed to pretty definitively think that this was everything that he would need to address. Did you catch that? He's like, that's why I came up here today. And I'm wondering if that was maybe his delay. He just wants to do it once. Because if the chapter comes out and there's there's not a lot more in there, he could probably say, I spoke on that in the offseason and just be done with it.
I felt for him in that moment, though, because I hope he's read the book.
Because after week one is when the book comes out. And in that chapter.
And God forbid he loses and looks bad in that game against Minnesota. I hope that he got an advanced copy. And had I been advising Caleb, I would have said, before we talk about this, we need to get a copy of that book.
But I thought he said that definitively. That, like, that's exactly what I thought he gave as his reasoning, in part why he came out and talked, is like, nah, there's nothing new. And that's
when it
comes
to the timing of the book, I believe it comes
book?
With a book.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I believe it comes out the day after the opener against the Vikings. Are you worried that it's going to be a distraction again?
Nah.
Are you confident that most of this is already out there?
That's why I came up here today to address this.
That's why I came up here today. And then he brought it back to the clarification of the film and stuff like that.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm not convinced that he has read that chapter of the book. And I hope that he doesn't have to worry about it. And that everything that he said today is that we're not going to get a drop the week before that it's like, oh yeah, remember that chapter?
Yeah.
There's more stuff that they said up in here.
How were you at age 23 as a public speaker and in terms of being willing to talk about what you didn't know? And before you answer that, I can say for me, I was an arrogant SOB. And some of you out there.
What? like an authority?
Some of you out there might think that I still am, and that's fine. But man, we used to make movies like with me and my friends. They were fun movies.
About Gladiator?
No. No. But we like, and it's like there's some footage of me pontificating at age 23, 24.
We all at that age thought Dude. We were like had the answer. Like we thought, oh, okay, now I've figured it out. I survived the teenage years. Yeah. Now I'm a grown adult.
And let me make a joke about how they thought I didn't know what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like I hear Caleb and I'm like, dude, I've been there. Like I was trying to tell myself I was good at stuff, and I wasn't as good at stuff as I thought. Like I understand the arrogance of being 23 and thinking that you got to fake it so everybody believes that you're the dude.
You guys, you know, we went through a whole year of listening to him speak. I think the after the game stuff was a lot more telling because that's when you got the, oh, I called Lincoln Riley. Oh, Lincoln Riley called me or whatever. But like that was the first time I felt like I ever heard the actual dude talking. Like, didn't it seem like last season it was all through his own PR filter?
Yes.
And that's where all the ums and uhs came from.
Yeah, the last 4, 5, 6 minutes of that, it felt like, oh, I'm hanging out with Caleb Williams. Didn't it?
That's why I didn't like everything that you're saying is exactly why I didn't like the opening statement. That it either could have been more official or more Caleb. And he kind of played the middle.
I agree
of
with
that.
You. I agree with you from a PR perspective that he should have just, you know, written 3 nice tight sentences and did that and then been himself.
And then, say, all right, whatever questions you guys have, I got you. Let's go.
Let's
get after it a little bit. And then he gets comfortable. To answer your question, extremely arrogant as a 23-year-old.
You were?
Oh, yeah. I had hosts tell me that when I was producing them here. It was important. It was important to my learning. Brian Hanley was like, what's with you?
Wow. Lawrence got so bad that the nicest man on the planet, Brian Hanley, said, what's with you?
He was right.
Well, you know what? Hanley's such a sweet, good man that, like, I love that. He probably was like, dude, no, this is not the way.
Yeah, but you also have to, I mean, you know, because you know the environment that we were in at that time. Hanley was an outlier compared to the other hosts that we had to deal with.
Hanley probably actually gave a crap about you to have a conversation.
That's why it resonated with me.
Yes, yes. Brian Hanley came to see my band like in 1996 or 97 or something. Just came over to hang out, watch some music. Like he gave a crap about people.
Yeah.
So that's why he gave you that opportunity.
And he was still talking about Lawrence years later, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he came over, he's like, hey, have you met Lawrence Holmes?
It's still accurate.
What's going on with him?
What's with that guy?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said it's still accurate, so I didn't have to be the one to say it.
No, I am self-aware of all of my issues, and I have been working on them steadily.
I think, like Pat Hughes said, we all have issues.
We do.
Yeah.
Still really good, though.
Man. But I like good for Caleb to come out and address it. I hope he's done with it. I hope he can now be done with it.
I would just like to say, in my defense of this, I do deal with people Caleb's age all the time.
Right.
And I deal with them doing public speaking all the time.
So you hold them to a standard and you're holding him to that standard.
No, I'm used to it, and I don't think, honestly, to be real with you, I don't think that the Bears did a great job with Caleb on that opening statement. And it might have been a situation of too many people were involved in that opening statement. And he's like, all right, I have to make sure that I talk about this thing. And I've got to make sure I mention Kevin. And I've got to make sure that I mention Ryan Poles. I think it could have been tighter, tight, just tighten it up a little bit is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Andrew, you're on the score.
Hey, how's it going, fellas? Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Hope you guys are having a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's very nice. I hope you're having a great day too, Andrew.
Yeah, we do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So Lawrence and Speaks, I agree with both your points. I agree a little bit slightly more with Lawrence just because I do think that he didn't handle some of the spots as well as he could have. And, you know, like, he does come off a listen, man, the thing is, like, it comes off a little bit entitled, but as long as he's good, that's all that matters. No one's going to care. No one is going to give a you-know-what. Like, as long as this guy produces and he brings us to the promised land, or not even that, just be a good quarterback, throw over 4,000 yards and 20-plus touchdowns, none of this is going to matter. I mean, at the end of the day, he's kind of like a little bit entitled just because of the generation he grew up in and his dad and everything, and just his circumstances coming up. You know, he was really highly touted and everything, and that's completely fine. As long as he produces, no one's going to care. We got to let this thing ride and let it play out. And I think he's, for the most part, was really good on the presser. Just he was a little shaky at the beginning, but it was good. You know,
I appreciate it, and thank you very much for the phone call. I will say this. I don't want to broad brush Gen Z. I love those kids. I'm
just glad Terry Bors left the broad brush here.
Yes. I don't want to broad brush and say that it's a generational thing, that's why he is what he is. But I do think that your overarching point, Andrew, is correct. Most people won't care at all if there are results. What I'm trying to tell you and what I want to do, my point of view on this, Caleb, unfortunately, is going to have to protect himself from people that clearly have been looking for opportunities to go at him. And that's what I've noticed over the last couple of weeks, where things were mostly okay and people were able to look and go, that thing in Chicago seems to be a real problem. And now all of a sudden, when the problems are raised by Caleb, then people are like, well, he didn't do enough. He didn't do enough at all. You know the dumpster fire that was going on here. You know that the offensive coordinator didn't know what he was doing. You know that the head coach didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So why would you assume that the kid knew what he was doing?
Yeah.
That's the part that I think people don't understand where I am on this. I don't like the fact that as soon as there was an opening to go after Caleb, and remember who's saying this right now, as soon as there was an opening to go after him, people went in herds after him. And I don't think that it's fair. And so whenever he gets an opportunity to defend himself, I want him to defend himself well. And I don't think that initially that's what happened.
Ah, see, there we are. Because some people will hear your comments and say, you are one of those people pouncing. But what you're doing that you just said is that you're trying to make sure he defends himself well. I think he did. I don't know what the opinionists and the television shows are going to take away from this and run with. They will probably just keep piling on.
Yes!
Because they need people to pile on. They might hear him defending himself with the yards and the interception stats as a step in the right direction, and they might pounce on that. Like, there's stuff that they might pounce on. I had my optimism and energy for the season reinvigorated by this and listening to him, because we are more ready than ever to think about some of the stuff that he was asked about there at the end. How you doing with adjusting the change in your stance? How you doing?
Well, he mentioned that, and I love that.
How you doing with adjusting and being under center more? And he's like, oh, the Ben Johnson effect? He'll love that. And he's like smiling and grinning about the relationship with Ben. Like, let's go. It is newsworthy and interesting to me for a variety of reasons. But one of them is, it's this kid's attitude coming up against a head coach who demands detail and demands respect and learning and execution at a very high level. And that's the dynamic that we're going to get to watch. And I cannot freaking wait. And we have comments from Ben Johnson today about the stuff that he needs to work on. And that's what we can get into. And I hope that we can get into it uncluttered from some of this stuff. Like Ben Johnson on body language, let's go. That's a real thing. That's a real issue. And Ben talks about it in a real way. And I hope that listeners can hear Ben talk about that and divorce it somewhat from feeling like they need to defend Caleb on every little thing. Because he's a pro athlete that deserves our attention and criticism as well.
But see, Speaks, that's another thing that I'm concerned that level of nuance is not going to be the way that people react to it. people are, and I don't even mean the score listener. It's going to offer those same people who have just been waiting, even though a lot of them know football.
Let them.
Okay.
Let them. And we can show the right perspective and the right nuance as we watch the quarterback and the head coach come together and watch right their lives now. Blend. That's right. Come on, people. Smile on your brother.
Clay Harbor.
Playing at Wembley Stadium, 90,000 sold out crowd in London. And for some reason, my heart's beating, getting out of a limo to go date some girl. Like, what's wrong with you?
Football analyst for Chicago Sports Network. Former NFL player.
Not a quarterback. I'm a tight end. But I've watched a lot of tape. I've been in meeting rooms with Tom Brady. Been in meeting rooms with Drew Brees. I've been in meeting rooms with Michael Vick. Quarterbacks know what they can do and what they can't do. And I know what a quarterback can and can't do and when you're supposed to expect them to be able to be successful.
Clay Harbor with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Clay Harbor. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Clay, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, man. I was great until I heard that introduction, man. I don't know, who can I talk to about maybe getting that switched around with that little bachelorette summary there?
Consider it done, Clay. All right. Complaint registered. We'll take care of that next time.
Yeah.
That's Brandon Fryer, though. That's Brandon Fryer.
He's just okay. Trying to.
Out of respect, though.
No. He's just messing with
us. I'm okay with it.
Well, I'm curious. Are you okay with what you saw yesterday from the Bears? I thought that they did a really good job of finally getting the kid out there and handling it. I wish they'd done it a week before, just because I didn't think there was much to see there to begin with. And then you hear from Caleb, and he handled it really well, and he didn't deny that anything was said. He just said, yeah, that's how things were, and it went down like that, and it's not a big deal. And I thought it was kind of asked and answered, and you took care of it. And why couldn't you just done that the minute it came out?
Yeah, me and Dave were having the same conversation yesterday on the Chicago Sports Network. I loved what he said. He was very open. He's talking about these were thoughts. These were conversations I was having with my father, being as where I was picked, with the number one pick. These are things you think about, but I never acted on them. After I went to Chicago, I decided I wanted to be a guy that was going to accept the challenge of turning this thing around. Perfectly said. My only problem with it was, why do you take 13 days
right
to do it when Caleb himself even said that it was a distraction? So he's, to his own admission, it was a distraction. You take 13 days. My only thing is, maybe this was somebody in the building that could have been like, hey, you know, let's get you out there and talk. I don't know if that's Caleb's decision on his own.
So, Clay, I think the other interesting aspect of yesterday, as we have discussed, is Ben Johnson talking about the value of body language in the Albert Breer report, where it was revealed that that's one of the points of emphasis this offseason, trying to clean those things up and not be a palms up team, is significant. And I think that if, from a former player's perspective, how would you rate or evaluate how significant it really is? And what did you see from Caleb Williams as a rookie that might need addressed?
I think it's very important, and they say 90% of what you say is nonverbal. I go back to a time, I'm in a huddle with Tom Brady. I just come from Jacksonville, and, you know, hearing Blake Bortles call plays, it's a very smooth tempo. It's kind of slow. You know, it's like green right, 373, Y-stick, X go, on one, ready, break. Tom Brady's in there. He sounds like an auctioneer. Green right, 373, Y-stick, X go, on one. This guy wants to get to the line of scrimmage so he can look at the defense, see what they're doing. You feed off of other people's body language. I didn't realize this, but in the huddle, I'm just sitting there looking confused when Tom's calling the play, because he's calling this so fast you can barely hear it. And he goes, Clay, in the middle of the huddle, I don't like that look in your eye. And then I start glaring at him like what, WTF, man? He goes, that's better. And then he calls the play. He saw my body language, the way I was looking, and to him, it didn't fit right with him. So he says that, and then I get, you know, a little ticked off. He's like, that's better. Calls the play. We go out there. So it matters. Other guys feed off your body language. It's what you're presenting to your team. It's what the other team sees. If you smell that blood in the water, We're over the sidelines. I'll look at them. They're ready to break, guys. They're ready to break. One more drive. Let's go out there. So it's a sign of weakness. Your teammates feed off of it. It matters. So, you know, if you don't want to get yelled at by Tom Brady, you know, make sure you have some good body language.
You know, the fact is that kind of attention to detail that we're seeing from Ben Johnson, you're setting a standard. You know, and I said this to David this morning. Quite frankly, I think they let themselves down a bit last year. Oh, we need to be coached harder. Oh, this guy's saying this. Like, I don't want to hear all that. I want you to go out and play, act professionally, and don't make people realize how out of whack everything is. Listen, everybody got fired. There's a reason it happened. I got no complaints about that. But I just didn't like how unlikable it was when you heard veteran players complaining.
When there was more podcasts than touchdowns, I think that was a problem.
Well said. You know? That's so well said. Absolutely correct.
Definitely more podcasts than touchdowns. What I'd love to see yesterday, so they're in the huddle, and you could see it's a little bit sloppy. You could have let this go. They're a little slow getting out the huddle, and they break it. And instead of letting them go to the line of scrimmage, finish the play, I can't repeat what Ben Johnson said, but the word started with an F, and then it went that. He said, F that, and get back in the huddle. And he makes them come all the way back, call the play quick, run up to the line, run the play, and then they actually had a successful play right there. So that's the kind of detail that you're seeing from Ben Johnson. And a reporter asked him, he's like, hey, what was up with that? He's like, hey, I'm not letting these guys get away with this in the huddle. We're holding ourselves to a certain standard that starts in the huddle all the way through the play. So I'm going to bring them back and make them redo that. So that's something that I saw yesterday that I thought was really impressive.
Clay, when we talk about the Ben Johnson effect, and Caleb Williams described it as being a left foot forward guy, he's always been a right foot forward guy, and now he's behind center rather than being in a shotgun formation. And these are things that might be seemingly minor to fans and people who don't play the position or are on the field. But how are you watching this unfold, and how important is it that maybe Caleb Williams adapt and adjust to Ben Johnson's way of doing things rather than the other way around?
I think it's important, and I think most quarterbacks do like that. It just makes it easier for him in these quick passes to be able to get the ball out and do it the way exactly Ben wants him to do it, because there's differences when you're throwing to the left, the right, and when you have one foot up, and if this is how Ben's done it, then that's what you want to see. One thing I thought was interesting is they were practicing some zone read yesterday, and you go back to Ben Johnson. He's never had the opportunity to run zone read. Mully, you could probably beat Jared Goff in a race, man. This guy could never – I mean, you pull zone read, you're pulling a linebacker out of the play. Now he's got Caleb Williams. You see him going through some zone read stuff. So usually the best rushing teams in the league, you got the Commanders, the Ravens, you know, the Bears a couple years ago with Justin Fields.
Yep.
When you can pull this extra number out of the box with your quarterback on that read play, zone read, outside zone, inside zone, with a threat of your quarterback, I thought it was interesting that you see Ben Johnson doing some of that now, because in Detroit, he didn't do any of that, and he couldn't because he had Ben Johnson. So you really see that he is playing to the strength of these guys, and I think you're going to see Caleb not run the ball a ton, but you might see four or five plays that are options or zone reads this year that I think will really improve that running game.
Clay, he threw a couple of picks yesterday by all reports. Were they missed throws? Did he do something? Why were there a couple of picks?
Man, one looked like he was just gifting Tremaine Edmonds a football. I mean, it just went right to Tremaine Edmonds' chest. He didn't see him. And the other one was a tip ball, and Brisker came down with it. But he had an up and down day. It wasn't perfect, but he did a lot of good things. Another one, he's rolling to the left. He throws the ball across his body. Big completion. He had a couple nice completions to DJ. Cole Kmet had a really nice day. So, I mean, it wasn't a perfect day for Caleb, but what I liked was he did throw the interceptions earlier on in practice. Then you come back and you see him really lock in, come back with a couple of big completions. So I think we've seen that from Caleb in his career. He'll have some atrocious first quarter where maybe they have negative yards. And I'm not I'm not being sarcastic here. There's a couple first quarters, first half even, where you're probably counting 10 to 20, 30 yards in the field. Then he comes back and finishes up well. So I love the way he came back, finished up practice, threw some great balls, and did finish on a hot streak there. And 7-on-7, there were no balls in the ground. So there are ups and downs, but I did like how he came back and didn't let that really affect him.
Talking with Clay Harbor from the Chicago Sports Network here on Mullen and Haw. So, Clay, I think the other thing that you observed, which is significant, that Ozzie Cipolla was the left tackle with the first team the entire practice. Now, Ben Johnson would later say that it's a musical chairs there and everyone's going to get a good look. But what was your impression of the first look at Ozzie Cipolla with the number one offense?
I always look at Ozzie, man. Ozzie's one of the first guys I want to see out there just because other rookies aren't out there. Obviously, Colson Loveland, Luther Burden aren't on the field, and I want to see how these guys react to their first NFL experience. Ozzie fits right in. His footwork is meticulous. He's got that bend. He's got reach. I don't think he gave up a sack all day. Darnell Wright actually gave up a couple to Dominique Robinson. Talk about a surprise in practice. Dominique Robinson actually looked pretty good out there. I mean, that guy's a specimen. But I think Darnell Wright will be fine. But Ozzie looked very crisp. He's a guy that's smart, intelligent, looks like he knows what he's doing out there, and just very impressive for a rookie to come in and just to look like he's poised and he's running with the first unit there. It's tough to do that. You're not with the twos. You're not with the threes. You're going with this first unit. So I really loved what I saw from Ozzie. Other rookie report, Ruben Hiplight had a couple nice plays. He had a PBU on a DeAndre Swift wheel route, showing a lot of speed there. I think that's all I got. Za Frazier, didn't see much from him, or Luke Newman. Obviously, the other two guys are out with some soft tissue, and then Colson's shoulder.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about Luther Burden, because he obviously fell on the ball in the rookie minicamp, and then he came back on the Sunday practice, but he didn't do everything. And now both days he's not been out there, the 2 days that the media has been allowed out there. You just can't help but wonder if there's something going on that is more serious than we've heard. And again, you know, I mean, my God, it's not even June yet, so you don't get too concerned. Just a little weird.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was out there at rookie camp when he did fall on the ball. Yeah. He made a big play. He looked good at rookie minicamp. I was really impressed with how he ran, how smooth he was when he caught the football. His transition after the catch was something that you can't coach, you can't teach. But we haven't seen him since. So these are valuable reps to miss. I think it's OTA 5. We've only seen 2. But to miss this many OTAs, it's definitely something that's more than just a nagging injury that he could get out there. So that is interesting. But I will say, I think Rome Odunze looks like he's improved. He's a guy that's a meticulous worker. In warm-ups, he's running full speed. Randall L. is out there giving a lot of energy, really coaching up these guys. DJ Morris practicing hard. And I'm going to give you guys my sleeper of camp here. This guy is a little Julian Edelman. He's a little Danny Amendola, short receiver from TCU. J.P. Richardson, I mean, this guy is quick. He can catch. He's a little slot machine, tough receiver room to make. But I really like this kid for maybe he could sneak on a roster or a practice squad guy. But J.P. Richardson looked good. And even Olamide Zaccheaus, that guy is quick. I mean, you see why he had the year he had in Washington last year.
Right.
He is quick, in and out of breaks, can catch everything. Just a true pro, working hard out there. I really like what I see from Zaccheaus.
Interesting. I did not expect those two names to come up. Clay, you also heard from Caleb Williams in terms of his explanation about how he watches film and the quote that everybody fixated on. I think you were a little bit critical at the time, like a lot of people were. But after hearing him yesterday explain what he meant by the word shortcut, and Mully and I talked about that, meaning maybe more efficiency in terms of watching tape and getting help, how did you interpret what you heard, and did it change your mind a little bit in terms of what he said or was reported to have said before?
Yeah, this makes a little bit more sense, because to me it's like, how do you not know how to watch film if you've played, and Dave, even you playing college football, you spend so much time in that building watching film with your coaches. I mean, there's hours that you're watching. You're watching your film. You're watching your opponent. So you're in this room, you're watching film as a team. You're watching film as an offense. Then you're watching film with your position group. For me, it was a tight end in the tight end room. And for him, it's a quarterback room. So you watch a ton of film together. So I'm like, wait, how do you not know how to watch film? He's like, no, I know how to watch film, but what I don't know is the shortcuts, which makes sense, right? Because they can send you so many things. You're getting a third down cut up. You're getting a red zone cut up. You're getting a base package cut up. You're getting a first down cut up, second down, third down, fourth down. Do I watch the last three games together wholly, or do I watch these cut-ups? You know, for me specifically, I was more of a, I'm going to watch the last couple games, and then I'm going to go into the cut-up. So what he's saying to me is, I don't know exactly what I should be watching. If you come in on Monday and watch film, you should probably watch base package, because Tuesday you're installing your base package. Wednesday you're going to install your third down. So Tuesday night, you watch your blitz package. So he's talking about he doesn't know exactly what to watch, and there's so many different cut-ups there that are just, when I say cut-ups, it's just clips of every third down, say they're playing the Vikings. The Vikings have ran. Every red zone defense, the Vikings have ran. So now when you get into red zone, your head flashes back to the film you watch in that red zone cut up, and you know exactly, okay, I'm looking for cover two here. I'm looking for cover four here. They might send a corner blitz, high alert corner blitz. Okay, it's third down. Now you go back to that third down cut up. Just a bunch of clips of all the third downs you run. Okay, on third down, I see Brian Flores likes to send a nickel. Okay, so I got to watch out for that nickel. They like to do games. I got to make sure to alert the offensive line for games. So that made more sense, and I think bringing Case Keenum in is a big factor there, because he knows he's been around a bunch of quarterbacks, and he's going to help him get on the right routine and watch the right tape so he can be successful and not think about it when he's on the field on Sundays.
Clay, I want to ask you another question about Ozzie Trapillo, and I just am curious, when you see him line up at left tackle and you mentioned his footwork, is there a pronounced difference between him and Karan Amagaji? I know Braxton Jones is down, so he's not out there at all. But I'm just curious, when you look at the two players, and we've seen now two practices and they've featured the two different guys playing the position, is it anything noticeable, or you got to wait till the pads go on?
You know, it's interesting, because with Kieran, he's this big, long, athletic guy. He's got 36.5-inch arms. And he is twitchy, but he's clunky in his sets. To me, it feels like he's a little off balance. His flexibility isn't what it needs to be. And I'll be honest, Ozzie looks better. He looks more under control. He looks more fluid in his sets. And he just looks more on balance. And when you think about it, he's honestly got more experience than Kieran Amagaji does. Kieran was hurt in college. Kieran missed all of off-season last year.
Right.
This is basically his rookie season. So Ozzie looks more like a veteran even than Amagaji does. And I don't think that people with the left tackle thing for Braxton Jones, or Darnell Wright, excuse me, they played right tackle and left tackle, Darnell Wright and Braxton Jones, when Braxton Jones was healthy. So you have Braxton Jones on this roster. He's just not there now. So why would you try to move Darnell Wright when you still have the guy that played there last year? To me, that doesn't make sense. Unless Ozzie was by far and away better on the right side, would you even think about that? But I think that's just a non-starter. You are not going to move Darnell Wright. We can get that out of our heads. The competition here is going to be between Braxton Jones when he gets healthy and Ozzie Trapillo in my eyes. So that's the something that I'm going to be interested in coming training camp.
Last thing quickly, Clay, when you hear Montez Sweat say the one thing that stands out, the word that comes to mind when Dennis Allen's name comes up is complex. And then he talks about the defense being more complex than he's dealt with in the NFL. Is that a good thing or not?
I think it's a good thing. It's going to take a little bit longer to learn, but that means it's a more difficult defense, an attacking defense. When I'm out there at OTAs watching film or watching the practice, I'm trying to decipher what he's running, and I'm sitting there with Alex Shapiro or Mark Carmen, Ruthie, Matt Verderam. Like, okay, this is cover two. He's going, the nickel's running in motion. Then he pops his zone. So he's confusing these quarterbacks. Some of the tells that you would usually see, say there's a linebacker that goes out when Cole Kmet lines up out wide. That's a man-to-man sign. Somehow he's popping his own coverage out of it. Doesn't make sense to me. So he's doing a lot of different things. That to me as a player, I'm like, wow, he's really going against what you can typically use as a rule set. And even the defensive line stuff, you're seeing some schemes, some stunts. He's doing double A-gap blitz already on third down when they're running the third down drill yesterday. So I think it's going to be a good thing. He's an attacking defensive coordinator, and it's going to pay off. This guy's ran some good defenses for a long time in the NFL. I think it's a good thing that he is complex.
Great stuff. Really appreciate your time, Clay. Thank you.
Thanks, Clay. Go back to working out now.
Appreciate it, guys.
That is Clay Harbor.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
How close do you think the Williams family was to actually not being drafted by the Bears in some way? Either getting out of it or having one of these plans come to fruition?
The gasoline's out. Do we want to light the match? And Caleb didn't want to light the match.
That was Seth Wickersham when we had him on talking about this. And we're discussing just the fan discourse when it comes to this. Like, for example, on Twitch right now, Deviant Burn 41, this is Rahimi and Harris on The Score, by the way, is going back and he's like, Caleb, not scheduled to speak. Media, he's ducking us. If you're not speaking to the media after you invited an author to be with you, knowing that they were going to put out a story coming out, a whole ass book in September, talking about your team, then yeah, you should answer questions about it after the story comes out. And then their answer was SMH, yes, because that's his priority right now, to get in front of mics to answer years-old questions. You think we're not going to ask him about last season? That's a year-old question. You think we're not going to ask him about getting sacked 68 times and how to avoid that next year? That's a year-old question. You think we're not going to ask about how to avoid a 10-game losing streak? That's a year-old question.
And they're...
That's what this is.
I don't... And I have nothing against Caleb Williams. And I want to make that clear. This
yeah,
doesn't.
Nobody wants the Bears to like crash and burn because he didn't want to be here. That's not the point.
This doesn't change how I feel about Caleb Williams. I like the dude, and I wanted them to draft him, and I'm glad that he's here. But the bottom line is that his dad is the one that started this fire. Like with this story, with those quotes, his dad was the one who started this fire, and Caleb is the only one with the hose who can put it out at this point, which is, while I agree with everything, the thing I keep going back to, Layla, is everything that they said in that article about this is where quarterbacks go to die and why it's where I agree with them. It's true. And I was saying that long before they ever drafted Caleb Williams. I take no issue with what they said or how they felt. But at the same time, why put this out there? A year after the fact, when he's here and you know he's going to be here for the foreseeable future, what is there to gain for Caleb Williams or the Bears to put this out there right now? And why light that match?
But
you know what I mean?
Here's my issue is you knew this was coming. You had this author join you for this entire process. The author is an ESPN writer. You knew that there was going to be a story that would come out at some point. Your dad is speaking. That means you get to speak next. You're your own man. But when you consider all the lengths that they were trying to go to avoid coming here, yeah, of course, we're going to ask you about it. But every day that it gets closer to the season, it becomes more of a distraction.
Yes.
So that's why it was frustrating. And yeah, you can say not scheduled to speak. That's what your PR staff is for, to protect you. And we can say that means you're not speaking to us, and therefore the story continues, which is what we do. Let's go out to the phones. Ron and Waukegan, 312-644-6767. Ron, you're on The Score.
Hey, afternoon, guys. Just want to say three quick comments. From Caleb's perspective, I could totally see why that was the perspective they had regarding the Bears. I think that's fair. Everybody has a question about where they're going to work, how it's going to be, am I going to be successful there? So I think it was a valid question.
Mm-hmm.
As it relates to his team, his father included, quite honestly, I think they do a good job of pushing back on whether or not you have to accept what's out there. Meaning they made the decision for Caleb not to give his medicals to 32 teams because he didn't have to. I think they needed to look at it. Do we have to go to the Bears? Do we have other options? What are the chances? If I had a team and I was paying legal and accounting people, I would at least want them to answer the question. And then as far as the media goes, I think it's obvious that he's given everything that he's had to give since he's been here. I mean, what can he get up there and say other than, yeah, I kind of thought that at some point, but I'm all in now. That's manifestly clear, not only by what his dad said in terms of him saying, I want to give it a shot, but based on really everything he's done since he's been here. He is trying to succeed as a Bear, period. Kind of end of story.
No, and I think that that's a fair piece of it. I just worry that when you know somebody didn't want to be there and you see the results on the field and what happened last season, that season matters to us. The results of that season matter. And if at the slightest setback here, can you lean on a guy like Ben Johnson? Is your infrastructure strong enough to say that nagging doubt that you had, and it wasn't just nagging based on the efforts we saw in that article?
Yeah.
That isn't true for you? Like, how many times have you said to yourself, oh, I knew I shouldn't have done that thing, or I knew I shouldn't have done this, when you have that indication? That's human nature.
Yeah, I think nobody thinks Caleb Williams came in here and didn't try hard because he didn't want to be a Bear, you know what I mean? Or he pouted his way through his first season, and that's why it went as badly as it did. But think about anything that you do, that you, like, pour your life into. You know what I mean? You have to have buy-in to have full confidence that you're going to be able to do what you want to do and that you're going to be able to accomplish what you want to accomplish. There has to be buy-in. You'd always hear Phil Jackson would always, when talking about leadership and things of that sort, he'd always say the first thing you got to do is get your best player to buy in. You know, yeah, what I mean? Did Caleb Williams just show up and was like, all right, I'll do the job the best I can? Or was he really sold on the fact that things are different here? Things have changed, and it's going to be different with you than it has been with all the quarterbacks that we've killed here. You know what I mean? And what made you change your mind? What made you buy in? And are you bought in? You know what I mean? Because if you don't have that, no matter how much he wants to succeed, no matter how hard he comes out and physically tries to be the best football player he can, if that's always in the back of his mind, that holds a person back.
It does. And for me, like, we're not talking about a guy who overcame this adversity and then led a playoff team. We're talking about a 5-12 team that's on a 10-game losing streak. Yeah, they've made steps. They hired somebody different, and they hired the best possible person they could. But until we see it on the field.
Right.
That's why this is a concern. And also, just talk to us then. You put the story to bed.
Exactly.
You tell us. It's really that simple. Well, let's go to Stepan in Oak Park.
Hey, guys. How we doing in there?
How are you?
I'm doing awesome. And I'm not going to keep you guys. I'm over 60. I'm born and raised in Chicago, and I've been watching Chicago sports my whole life. My opinion on this is the comments were made. He wasn't a Chicago Bear, and his father made some comments, and it's no big deal if he doesn't even mention it for the rest of the season, in my opinion. Now, I'm going to say one other thing, then I'm going to let you talk. John Elway, Peyton Manning, okay, they orchestrated where their sons went to other teams. This is just talk. He wasn't even a Chicago Bear. His father's talking. Those guys orchestrated other places for their sons to go. Okay? It's not a big deal, guys. He wasn't even a Bear.
Did we lose him?
Well, that was Stepan. But the thing is, his dad did talk to those families.
Right.
Like, that was actually part of the story.
And his dad put it, Should we have just ignored the whole story? From like his dad comes out and puts this out there. Should we have just have ignored the whole thing altogether?
Turning it off until 2. I'm not in denial about this. This is a thing that happened.
Yes. And somebody said, how do we know it's a distraction? I don't. I don't know if it... That's another question for Caleb Williams to tell us about.
And 630, the statement that Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die is not true. Mitchell Trubisky and Justin Fields both sucked as they proved that they have nothing on the other teams that they have played for. That doesn't really prove it incorrect. That just proves more obvious that...
We don't know if
those guys... It's not a good place to develop people.
Exactly. We don't know if those guys would have been better if they ended up in someplace different. And B, if they just sucked from the beginning... That means that the Bears' whole evaluation process is like before they even get in the building, it's a mess. You know what? They don't even know how to evaluate quarterbacks before they draft them, much less develop them when they get. If those guys were just garbage and were always going to be garbage as a quarterback at the NFL level, then that just means that the Bears blew the pick before they ever even made it.
Yeah, none of these.
That doesn't help.
No, 414 is like, so maybe the other question should be, why did you not go nuclear? Yes, that should be a question. Why did you not go nuclear? I would love to know that answer. But we don't have any right now, and that's why we're bothered.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.